This morning I want you to imagine with me for a moment. Imagine that a group of Christian missionaries from Israel, let's say, came to Dunn, North Carolina. And they looked around and they saw this great building and they observed our worship services with us on a Sunday morning. They joined us for a potluck meal. And then they told us, after spending some time with us, a day or two, that they needed to sit down with us and talk. So we sit down together and they tell us they really want to help us grow. They have time-tested strategies to evangelize and invigorate faith communities around the world, and they lay out a plan for us. They tell us we must stop wasting so much money on this building. The gospel is not about a building, after all. It's about people, they say to us. They tell us we have to sell our beautiful stained glass windows and the organ and the piano and the sound equipment. We even need to sell our land. Christ had no land when he began his missionary efforts. He had no building, no fancy musical instruments, and his message lives on 2,000 years later. So we need to get back to our roots if we are to be successful. We need to get back to meeting in homes, as was the custom of the early church that we read about, for example, in the book of Acts. We need to sing together. We need to share meals together, pray together, and share our money and possessions with anyone who has a need. It says it right in Acts chapter 2, and it repeats it again in Acts chapter 4. And it was good enough for the early church. It's been good enough in Israel since the time of the early church, and so it ought to be good enough for us here in Dunn, North Carolina. It's what Jesus did, and so it's what we should get back to doing as well. Now, how do you feel about that? How would you feel about those Christian missionaries from Israel coming over here and telling you how to do church? What would you be thinking? What are you thinking? Probably you didn't even like what I said too much right there in that story, maybe. Take a few seconds and really consider how you would feel if this actually happened. You'd probably show those missionaries the door, wouldn't you? I probably would too. Invite them to go right back where they came from. You might tell them that there's some folks back in Israel that could really benefit from those ideas, and that they should get right back there and take their ideas to their own people. Now, I wonder why you and I might feel that way. I wonder why we'd be so upset, turned off, maybe even ticked off a little bit. And now I invite you to listen to this story that comes to us from the book of Acts in chapter 15. I'm going to read from the Message translation, which is a paraphrase of the Bible by Eugene Peterson. And I'm going to skip a few verses here and there so that you can really get the gist of this story as a whole. It goes like this. It wasn't long before some Jews showed up from Judea insisting that everyone be circumcised. If you're not circumcised in the Mosaic fashion, they said, you can't be saved. Paul and Barnabas were up on their feet at once in fierce protest. The church decided to resolve the matter by sending Paul, Barnabas, and a few others to put it before the apostles and the leaders in Jerusalem. When they got to Jerusalem, Paul and Barnabas were graciously received by the whole church, including the apostles and the leaders. They reported on their recent journey and how God had used them to open things up to the outsiders they met along their way. Some Pharisees stood up to say their piece. They had become believers, but continued to hold the hard party line of the Pharisees. You have to circumcise the pagan converts, they said. You must make them keep the law of Moses. The apostles and the leaders called a special meeting to consider the matter. The arguments went on and back and forth, getting more and more heated. Then Peter took to the floor. "Friends," Peter said, "you well know that from early on God made it quite plain that he wanted the pagans to hear the message of this good news and embrace it. And not in any second-hand or roundabout way, but first-hand, straight from my mouth. And God, who can't be fooled by any pretense on our part, but always knows a person's thoughts, gave them the Holy Spirit exactly as he gave the Spirit to us. He treated the outsiders exactly as he treated us, beginning at the very center of who they were and working from that center outward, cleaning up their lives as they trusted and as they believed him. So why are you now trying to outdo God, loading these new believers down with rules that crushed our ancestors and crushed us too? Don't we believe that we are saved because the Master Jesus amazingly and out of sheer generosity moved to save us just as he did from beyond our nation? So what are we arguing about?" Peter said. There was dead silence. No one said a word, and with the room quiet, Barnabas and Paul reported very matter-of-factly on the miracles and wonders God had done among the other nations through their ministry. The silence deepened. You could hear a pin drop. James broke the silence. "Friends, listen. Simeon has told us the story of how God at the very outset made sure that outsiders were included. This is in perfect agreement with the words of the prophets." And James went on to quote some words from the prophets, closing by saying, "God said it, and now he's doing it. It's no afterthought. He's always known he would do this." "So here's my decision," said James. "We're not going to unnecessarily burden non-Jewish people who turn to the Master. We'll write them a letter and we'll encourage them." Everyone agreed, the apostles, the leaders, and all the people. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. I want to easily sum this story up. It's a bit long. Jewish Christians were struggling over what to do with new Gentile converts who didn't conform to the Jewish customs of the day. Many of those Jewish Christians felt they should do exactly what the Jews did. For example, be circumcised as a sign of the covenant handed down from Moses on through the generations. And this created a problem because circumcision was not the practice of Gentiles. And so there were arguments back and forth until some disciples stepped in to basically say that God had already been at work in the Gentiles. Sound like a sermon from a few Sundays ago? God's already there. There's no need for those Gentiles to conform to Jewish customs simply because the Jews said they should. In other words, some folks believed that they knew what was best and right for others. But Peter stood up for the Gentiles and told those Jewish Christians that they should stop acting as if they knew best. They should stop acting like parents to the Gentiles. They should stop trying to take the place of God. That's essentially Peter's message. There's a word to describe the actions of folks when they believe that they know what is best for others. You know what that word is? It's a nasty little word. It starts with a P. Paternalism. Maybe you've heard of that word before. It's not something we like to talk about in our society. It basically means acting as a father or a parent to someone that is not your child. You don't ever tell someone how to parent, and you don't ever try to parent someone that's not your child, right? You get in big trouble when you do that. And in this story in the book of Acts, we see the early church struggling with paternalism. One group of believers telling another group of believers how they should be believers or followers of Christ. We did it this way, and you should do it the same way that we do it, they said. Some of the Jews believed that they knew what was best. They said to themselves, "Ah, it was good enough for me, so it ought to be good enough for you too." That was their attitude. God made us Jews do it, so you've got to do it too. And they were dead wrong. And Peter stepped in to tell them so. And we struggle in our world with paternalism as well. And it happens far too often in mission work. You see, mission work becomes paternalistic when one group of folks, the missionaries, for example, think that they know what's best for other folks, the folks that they go out to serve. Mission work becomes paternalistic when the haves of the world believe that they have all the answers for the have-nots. Mission work becomes paternalistic when folks have to jump through hoops to receive help and assistance. Mission work becomes paternalistic when we try to fix people, believing that if they just did things our way, then their lives would be fine just like ours. And so I want to leave you today with a thought about why such attitudes, such paternalism doesn't work in our world, about why it's focused on the wrong thing, and why at the end of the day, paternalism is really about trying to take God's place, just like some of those Jewish Christians in the story from Acts. Take a look back at your bulletin. Isn't that a beautiful lake on the cover there? Pristine, gorgeous. Wouldn't you love to take a plane down to those pretty blue waters right now? Sit out on the end of that pier and just enjoy that view. So let's imagine for a moment that we take a trip there right now and enjoy that beautiful scene for a few days. You walk out to this lake and you step out on the pier and you take a deep breath. Gaze out in awe of that majestic scene. And then you look down. And you notice that in spite of the amazing blue water, floating in that water at the end of that pier is a poor little fish. Poor little fish floating belly up. What do you think to yourself when you see that little fish? Floating belly up, you know he's not doing so well. What do you wonder to yourself about that fish? Maybe you think to yourself, is this fish dead? What's going on? What happened to this fish? Did he eat something bad? You make a poor food choice and end up at the end of somebody's hook and they tossed him back in because they were just fishing for sport, maybe. Maybe you got too close to some predators in the lake. And you think to yourself, perhaps, if this fish were only as smart as the other fish around him that are alive, he'd probably be alive right now too. He should have taken some lessons, paid better attention to his parents, his fish parents. And he'd be alive right now. But then you look around some more and you notice another fish floating belly up in this beautiful lake. And then you notice another and another and another, and you look around and you realize that there are dead fish all over the place, floating just below the surface of this water belly up. You just didn't see it at first with all that beautiful scenery, those pristine mountains, that beautiful blue sky, and those deep blue waters. You just didn't notice all these dead fish. With hundreds, maybe even thousands of dead fish floating in this lake, what do you start thinking now to yourself? Maybe you start to wonder, what's wrong with this lake? What's causing all these fish to float up dead? Maybe there's something toxic in the water killing all these fish. Maybe there's an epidemic, a disease in the lake. You see, too often when we do mission work in the world, we treat each person that we see like that one dead fish. We wonder what they did wrong. We think how they would be fine if they just did X, Y, or Z. And we try to help them make better choices. Learn certain skills that we believe would solve the problem. And the truth is, there are hundreds of folks floating belly up in the lake we call Dunn or Harnett County or North Carolina. And yet our mission work almost never looks at the lake. Think about it. The water quality, the environment that is causing these fish to float up, belly up. Too often our mission work tries to fix fish and send them back into a toxic lake, only to find that a few months later they are floating belly up again. And when we fail to pay attention to the lake, you can be pretty sure that we have begun to be a bit paternalistic. You can be pretty sure that we've taken the place of God in people's lives, telling them what is best for their lives, when the truth is, we know very little about their lives. Now, the answer is not to stop everything we're doing and go out and try to address the lake and solve the problem that way. No, there's too many fish that will float up dead tomorrow if we take that track. There are fish that need our time and attention and our care and compassion tomorrow, today. We need to help and we need to serve them just as Christ would and is. But we also need to take time to consider the lake, to ask questions about our mission work. Are we just fixing fish? Or are we also trying to make the lake healthy and safe for these fish? Notice that I didn't say in my story that I asked you to imagine, I didn't say all the fish in the lake were dead. No, not at all. Some fish in the lake are doing just fine. The water is just fine for them. They're doing well. In fact, some of them are thriving. It was just these particular fish that were struggling by the hundreds and the thousands. So the lake isn't affecting everyone badly, just some. Brothers and sisters, our job as followers of Christ in a world where there are haves and have-nots is to ensure that every one of God's fish are cared for and have a place to live in which they, even when they're different than us, can thrive every day just like you and just like me.